On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Representative Mark Bourne on the line, a Republican from Beaver Dam. Earlier this month, he was named co-chair of Joint Finance Committee following Representative John Nygren's resignation. The committee is charged with overseeing the budget process and the state's funding priorities. It last met 11 weeks ago. What should lawmakers prioritize in crafting the next state budget amid the pandemic? What's the most pressing issue facing your community, your family, that needs to be addressed in the budget? It's 800-642-1234. Mark Bourne represents District 39, including Horicon, Juneau, Beaver Dam, parts of Hartford. He was elected to the Assembly in 2012, served on the legislature's Budget Writing Committee since 2017. Representative Bourne, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So Assembly Speaker Robin Voss appointed you co-chair of JFC this month. Give us a framework for how you will approach the budget process, how you will approach this chairmanship.
Well, I certainly learned a lot from my good friend and former colleague, John Nygren, on the last couple of budgets. And I think for the most part, we have pretty good systems in place with how the committee works through the process. And I wouldn't expect to see a lot of differences, but certainly we'll approach it in much the same way that we have in the last two budgets that I've been there, at least. And we'll wait for the governor to put out the executive budget, and we'll certainly analyze that. We'll certainly talk with our caucus and people throughout Wisconsin through the work of our legislatures in their own districts, as well as through different ways that we reach out throughout the state on what we always called the roadshow to get public input. And then we'll craft a budget that will probably look a lot similar to what you've seen from the Republican legislature in the last few budgets, where we'll spend in priority areas and make investments in our state and our communities. We'll always look for ways to return money to the taxpayers. And we've been very focused on finding ways to improve the state's economy, the economic situation, economic growth. And I think certainly this budget, that might be one of the most important things as we come out of this national pandemic. Mm-hmm. In the next year, we're going to have to focus on how we can bring back strong economic growth to the state in general, but especially to certain sectors of our economy that have been hit really hard in this national pandemic.
Right, right. You know, the principal function of your committee is to do a detailed review of the governor's biennial budget recommendations, as you said, and then ultimately be the leader in crafting the legislature's budget bill. But you're working in an extremely acrimonious environment between Republican lawmakers and the governor. How will you build consensus? How will you improve relations to get a budget passed?
Yeah, that certainly will be one of the challenges. But I think if we look at the last cycle that we're just ending now, like you said, there were a lot of partisan bickering, acrimonious. But we still crafted a budget. We still were able to find enough compromise to get things placed into the budget that the Republican legislature wanted to see accomplished, as well as things that Governor Evers wanted to see accomplished. And we were able to get a budget done. So I think that, you know, we'll work off of that experience and try to do the same thing this time around. But, yeah, there's no doubt there's challenges. There's challenges with politics. There's challenges with a national pandemic. There's still some uncertainty on how the revenue will be. So there's challenges with every budget. This one might have some slightly different ones, but that's the job of the committee to work through those and the governor to work through those. And we'll do that.
Yeah, we're going to look at revenue here in just a moment, but I want to reintroduce you. We're talking with Mark Bourne, who represents District 39 in the State Assembly. He's the new co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee. You can join in. What would you like lawmakers to prioritize in the next budget? How do you want to see the legislature and the governor come together next year? Join in at 800-642-1234. Representative, the state, the Wisconsin Policy Forum projected the state will have to account for a $373 million budget shortfall. You've said that it's too early to know with certainty what the budget will look like. What are you watching for? What other factors do you think need to be considered when there is this type of projection?
Yeah, we're always having those type of projections. There's always a wide variety of them at this point in the budget process. It's pretty early yet. We'll see, month to month, new sales tax revenue and stuff that will help us continue to project. We'll have new projections from our fiscal bureau in January, and then another set of projections later in spring when we're in the middle of the budget process that always give us a better look at what the reality is expected to be. There's a lot of unknown financial situation with the federal government at this point. You know, they're continuing to, it appears, work on another CARES package. I think there certainly will be one at some point, but exactly what that will be and what kind of money that will be for states will impact things. So there's questions out there yet. There always is at this point. The budget forecasting always gets easier the closer you get to actually completing the budget. So I don't think we'll spend too much time on a specific number that someone's projecting right now, but we'll work through the process like we usually do.
Let's take a call now. Jacob is joining us from Madison. Good morning, Jacob.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, go ahead.
Thank you. I wondered about Foxconn and the situation that's going on with Foxconn. Scott Walker and the Republicans had set up this arrangement, and now there seem to be endless issues going on with Foxconn and what they owe the state in terms of jobs, and they're not coming through. Is the budget committee responsible at all for figuring this out and working things out so that the state isn't getting screwed?
Representative Bourne?
Sure. Yeah, I don't think there's too much role for the budget committee in it at this point, because we set it up so that the incentives had to be earned. And so if they're not earned, the state isn't out any money. And so at this point, the administration has said that Foxconn hasn't earned any of the credits. And so we're not paying any of those out. I don't think any of those are being included in the agency budget at this point for the next 2 years. So that obviously remains to be seen if they earn those, but if they're not earning those, there isn't any state cost to that. And so at this point, there really isn't any concerns from a budget perspective on that, because that's really the way it was set up in the bill, that it had to be earned. And if it's not, then there really isn't any financial investment from the state.
You mentioned state agencies have submitted their budget requests for the money they say they'll need to do their jobs. Of those agency requests, what are your priorities?
Well, I think that, the caucus priorities will probably be pretty similar to what they've been in the past. Education is always a priority. Investments in the road system, especially local roads, was a huge priority in the last budget. I think you'll see that again. Our healthcare sector is always a priority, and maybe in light of what we've been going through in the national pandemic, even more so now. So those are some of the general areas that will be focused on, I would imagine, in this upcoming budget.
Representative Mark Bourne of Beaver Dam is the new co-chair of the State Budget Writing Committee. How would you like to see state lawmakers address COVID through legislation when they reconvene? What should a state relief package include? What do you want Representative Bourne to bear in mind while crafting the next state budget? It's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute, more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking with Representative Mark Bourne of Beaver Dam. Earlier this month, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss installed Bourne as co-chair of the state's Budget Writing Committee. He will preside alongside State Senator Howard Markline of Spring Green, who replaced Senator Alberta Darling. She has served as co-chair since 2011, and this means the Budget Committee has two new co-chairs when the session begins next year. What does responsible budgeting mean to you? How do you want this committee to respond to the COVID crisis? It's 800-642-1234. And Representative Bourne stays with us for 10 more minutes. The Assembly Republican COVID proposal would give more power to your committee, power to transfer state funds to address COVID, power to block the vaccine distribution plan, and oversight of the federal funds that are forthcoming, perhaps, in the next stimulus bill. Why should the committee control these funds and plans?
Yeah, and I don't even know if more power is the right way to characterize it. It's actually giving us the similar oversight that we have in most other areas. I mean, we already have the ability to transfer other funds through the 1310 process. We already have oversight of most appropriations. It's just the federal COVID ones have been exempt from that at this point. So we're just trying to make it more similar to the oversight. And it's not unusual for plans to be brought before the committee for passive or active reviews either. So that's really all we're trying to do here is just make sure the legislature remains involved in these processes, and especially in the cases of where significant amounts of money are being spent on behalf of the taxpayers of Wisconsin.
The GOP members of the Assembly recently announced this plan to address the pandemic, and it includes provisions that would require state workers to go back to the office, require teachers to teach in person, restrict local government powers to limit capacity at businesses. Why do you think this is the best approach to combat the pandemic here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think, there was a couple of areas you mentioned there. I mean, for one, the education one, I think it's been nationally recognized now that it's important to have kids in the classroom learning. We've shown that they can operate safely during this national pandemic, and that's been a priority, I think, in some states, a bipartisan priority. And so I think we see more schools moving towards that, and I think that's a very reasonable approach, as well as bringing state workers back. There are a lot of businesses throughout Wisconsin that have been operating very safely following CDC guidelines, and I don't think that state government is any different. I think we can manage that as well. So really, it's just learning along the way from other governments, other businesses, schools, whatever the case might be, as we've learned more than we knew in March about COVID-19. There are ways to operate safely, and we think that that's how the state should be moving forward.
Senator Devin Lemahieu, the incoming Republican majority leader, has said he'll not reconvene this month to consider this package, with there being little chance of package. Are these bills a starting point next year? Where are we at here in addressing the pandemic?
Yeah, I think the governor put forward a plan. The Assembly Republicans put forward a plan. The Senate leadership is working on a plan. And those are all part of the discussions. And so legislative leadership has been meeting with the governor, and the staffs have been meeting, and we're working through that process. And so I think that, if you look at the governor's plan and the Assembly plan, there are a lot of areas that are exactly the same or very similar. That are starting points, and we continue to work through that process. And, back in April, we passed a comprehensive package that gave a lot of power to the executive branch to respond to the COVID crisis.
Yeah, but it's 9 months later and nothing has happened, and people are out of jobs. They are running out of money. I mean, there has been crisis implications here in Wisconsin, and no legislature coming together.
Yeah, well, the way the legislative branch works is you set up appropriations and you set up policies, and the executive has to execute those. So we put over 50 things in that package, most of which are still current. some of which are ending at the end of this year, like the federal money and some of the things that were put in that package, which is why we're discussing a new package, because it's time now when those things are expiring to do a lot of the similar things as well as some new things, because like I said, we've learned more along the way. But there was, you know, never any time now where the governor hasn't had access to resources to address these issues. They've had over $2 billion in federal money available. We put $75 million in state money in the initial package. They didn't access any of that because they had all that federal money available. We're proposing even additional resources in the current assembly plan. So those things are all in place. And like I said, now that some of them are starting to expire, it's time to do another package, and that's what we're actively working on.
We're talking with Mark Bourne, who represents District 39 in the State Assembly. He's the new co-chair of Joint Finance Committee, taking your questions on the budget crafting process, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jim now in River Falls with a question. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. My question is, you know, in the past, when Governor Walker was the governor here, the state legislature, and he rejected federal funding for Medicare, which would have saved millions of dollars for Wisconsin taxpayers. What's going on with that at this point?
Go ahead, Representative.
Yeah, I think the caller was talking about Medicaid expansion. And so that's something that I'm sure will be discussed in this next budget as it was in the last budget. It seems like Governor Evers certainly has made it a priority. Generally speaking, the legislative leadership and legislative Republican caucus has not been interested in a massive expansion of welfare for our healthcare system. And instead, we've focused on other ways to make sure that we have everyone covered in Wisconsin. And so we have great coverage in Wisconsin by the systems that we've put in place, using the exchange and subsidies and buying down some of the costs of that the last two budgets with investments that we've made. And so, I mean, I think that'll continue to be our focus, is how do we get people access to health care and when we can, in health care in the private sector, as opposed to an expansion of the welfare program.
Jim, thanks for the call. Let's look at workforce development here with the backlog of unemployment claims since unemployment increased, spiked. How would you like to see this addressed in the next budget?
I think we're going to have to make some investments there. I mean, it would be great to see the administration start to lead on this issue. This has certainly been one of their top failures of this last year. And so far, they haven't proposed anything for improvements. There was nothing in the agency budget asking for any sort of upgrades to their systems or anything. I think it's going to be a combination of things. I think we probably will start upgrading some systems, but also there just needs to be some leadership there. I mean, it's been an epic failure so far. There's still, I believe, over 60,000 people waiting to get their unemployment insurance. It's been weeks and weeks that people have waited. And it's really been one of our top concerns, and something that we have still now, 9 months into this, really seen no leadership from the administration at all. So hopefully they're going to step up at some point. It's pretty hard to do comprehensive reforms without some partnership there, but it's something we're certainly going to focus on and push for in this legislative session and this next budget.
Well, they have done some things, right? I mean, they've staffed up considerably, added positions, hundreds of positions. They paid out over $1 million, I last checked, on overtime pay for their employees. So do you see that this agency needs to grow in order to address this crisis?
I don't know how much it needs to grow. There's certainly temporary growth, and that's something that we allowed for in the April package, and to bring in contract employees, to transfer employees. It was something that was very slow to happen, and I still am amazed how far behind they are and how many weeks it's taken for people to get help. It's something that our legislative offices have been working with people directly on throughout the process. And certainly there has been payments made, as you stated, but it's been concerning how slow they were to respond and how long it's been taking. And I think there are major problems within that system of how they operate, and some reforms are going to be needed.
Before
and
we go here,
people are changing processes. We'll see.
Before we go here, there was a letter last week you wrote objecting to reimbursing county clerks for their work doing the election recount, and this request needs to be discussed by your committee. What is the objection and status?
Yeah, members just wanted some more information, and so when we reached out to the Elections Commission trying to get more details on that, we were told that there aren't even any bills submitted yet. So we just hit the pause button, so to speak, so that we could get some more information, and we're waiting for those counties to submit their bills so we can take a look at some of the details and move forward.
Representative, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Representative Mark Bourne is a Republican from Beaver Dam. He's the new co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. We'll discuss the governor's task force on climate change report. Just came out, 55-point plan. How do you want Wisconsin to address the climate crisis? We're at 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with the Lieutenant Governor after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who chairs the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change. It's a group of 32 members who met regularly in public meetings for nearly a year. They're out with a 120-page report, 55 recommendations intended to help Wisconsin mitigate the effects of climate change. Have you seen the report? What do you think? What should be acted on? Where do you see potential obstacles? Have you seen the effects of climate change in your area? We're at 800-642-1234. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning, and thank you so much for having me on to have a moment to talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, you met for about a year through a lot of different issues, a lot of different environmental certainly a lot of different natural disasters even during this time. How did you see the task force approach this work of this plan?
So we approached it using science. That was the bare minimum that, you know, we should have been doing this work a long time ago. We were doing this work a long time ago, I should add. Former Governor Doyle did have a task force on climate change. Some people may remember, some may not. But unfortunately, all that work went away for 8 years after Governor Doyle left office. So we let science guide our decision making. And we want to have a specific emphasis on environmental justice, because it was important for people to recognize the harm that is done to communities because as a result of climate change. This happens in low-income communities, predominantly communities of color, rural communities, urban and suburban communities alike. But the fact is, there are people who contribute to climate change who get away with a whole lot. Leaving these communities, leaving these families, leaving these neighborhoods to, again, deal with those devastating impacts from an economic perspective and also from a health perspective.
Your task force encouraged the creation of the Office of Environmental Justice. What would this office do?
This would be an office that looks at certain environmental hazards, specifically water contamination, air quality issues, what decision making for certain operations and whether it's industry and agriculture and whether you're talking about manufacturing, whatever the case may be, we need to take a hard look at the impact that will be felt by large scale operations. And also, I hope that this office will steer us in the decision of of better decision making. When we put up new buildings, what is going to be the harm to the planet? But how can we also benefit families? How do we make sure that we are building the most efficient buildings that meet certain standards, that keep in mind the health and safety, especially of our children and other vulnerable populations? As we see, that becomes more of an issue as COVID-19, you know, gains in prevalence across the state and across this country. You know, we have a vaccine on the way, but we're still going to have a few rough months ahead of us. And I think that this is putting us in a position as states to reexamine public health, and environmental issues are public health issues.
And I want to ask you about vaccine rollout here just a bit later. But, you know, some of the functions here about clean air and clean water, they happen under the umbrella of the DNR. How would this office be different from what is happening within that DNR state agency?
Some do, but this is more specifically focused on those issues of environmental justice and injustice. I think that we need to make sure that we are better in consultation with our tribal partners. I think that we should be better when it comes to environmental remediation. You know, DNR can do so much, but I think that we have room to cast a much wider net with this Office of Environmental Justice. And I'll say that we'd be no different than other states. Honestly, this is one of the least novel parts about the task force report. We may be the only state besides Indiana. I'm not sure about Ohio, but all other Great Lakes states have an Office of Environmental Justice.
How did your task force work with our state's tribal communities on the climate change strategies?
Oh, we had members of tribal communities on the task force who were members just like any other interest group, any other stakeholder, any other partner in this sort of work, as they have been and will continue to be.
We're talking with Mandela Barnes, Lieutenant Governor of our state, chair of the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change, which released its strategies last week. You can join in with your questions about the climate crisis in Wisconsin at 800-642-1234. Lieutenant Governor, what was the task force, you know, determination to be the best way to create green jobs in our state? What is the vision?
Yeah, so there are a number of paths. One being the Green Grant Program from that will be administered through WEDC, which provides startup funding to help people get off the ground who want to get involved in renewable energy. And that's going to be key for us. There's also a worker retraining program because, you know, we are going to need a workforce to get this done. And the thing about Wisconsin, which is an argument that's used in states like Pennsylvania or even Ohio, possibly even Indiana a little bit more, is, you know, people are going to be losing out who are working in the fossil fuel industry. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, whatever, however you want to look at it, we don't have that many jobs in the fossil fuel industry. And so the reason I would say unfortunately is because there's not a lot that's holding us back. We are just spending, you know, boatloads of money every year as consumers, as a state, to generate energy from sources.
Although coal is a major driver in our state of energy.
Coal is produced, but we don't have, there aren't a bunch of coal jobs here in Wisconsin.
I see what you mean.
Yeah. And I thank you for highlighting that, because we get so much of our energy from coal production. That coal is not here in Wisconsin, but we do have wind that can produce energy here in Wisconsin. And today is not the best example, but sun is also an energy source that can be used here in the state of Wisconsin. We can look to the west in Iowa. We can even look to Minnesota, and their share of energy that comes from renewable energy sources puts us to shame. And Iowa, they've gone all in on wind energy. You know, this is an opportunity for Wisconsin to just catch up to the states that are around us. But I think that we have to do much better than that, because we were on a path to do much better than that some time ago. But again, for the green jobs portion, there is a transition piece. There's a grant piece. There's also support for, you know, our tech colleges. They've done an incredible job already with some of their programs around solar already. I had a chance to tour two different schools last year. Got to see a solar program in action. Got to see a wind program in action.
So on the solar projects, on new solar projects, are the infrastructure for those projects currently being built mostly out of state with out of state workers? What does the labor force look like?
Well, labor force, fortunately, we do have a lot of that is here, and a lot of it is also unionized. I went to a solar installation just outside of Green Bay. with a group of sisters, and you know the group that I can't think of the company actually, but they were IBEW. So here we have an opportunity to create good paying union jobs to make the state of Wisconsin the way that we used to be, strong and full of opportunity for people to get ahead in different industries. And I want to remind people that, you know, we have a hard work ethic in Wisconsin, and we also have a maker's ethic. We have an ethic of, you know, we have a history of manufacturing. And I want to remind people that even less so than the workforce, I think the workforce component isn't the problem of having people from out of state coming to fill those jobs. I think that we need more opportunities to employ the people who are already here. But I do want to remind people that not a whole lot of these solar panels and wind turbines are made in the USA, much less the state of Wisconsin. So that is an opportunity for us to get back to our manufacturing roots, to be able to not just produce energy here, but produce the machinery that produces the energy.
Lieutenant Governor, this 120-page plan, it doesn't include specific funding projections. Why is that?
That's right. I want to leave the door open there. And the thing is, there are a lot of people who would like to use certain numbers as a cudgel. They would like to use those numbers to beat us over the head and say, oh, this is very unrealistic. But the most unrealistic thing is the amount of money that we're going to continue to spend if we don't get a grip on climate change, because we are already spending that money to repair damaged infrastructure. Insurance companies are already paying out large sums of money for homes that are affected. And in the worst instances, people don't get their insurance claims accepted. And I'll remind people that, you know, we actually had insurance companies on the task force because this is an issue for them as well. We have been paying out, you know, a lot of money. People's lives and livelihoods are being disrupted in real time. And so in order for us to avoid unnecessary arguments, I mean, we'll cross the bridges when we get there. But the reason why there isn't specific funding, because a lot of this stuff is flexible also.
When you look specifically at the flooding that has happened over the last few years, northern Wisconsin experiencing 3 once-in-a-lifetime storms in a decade, what can the state do to help communities likely to see future flooding and more of it?
Yeah, so we need to adapt more mitigation strategies, you know, because I'm not going to sit here and sell anyone a bill of goods. You know, this task force report isn't going to solve climate change in 1 year. It's not going to solve it in 3 years. It took a while for us to get here, but we can absolutely do the work right now to get us out of it, because things can get worse and we need to make sure that things are not worse for the next generation. But until then, I think that we could adopt more strategies to prevent flooding, or at least lessen the impact. That means protecting our wetlands. It means making sure that we are smart about the way and the location where we are rebuilding these roads, where we are building these bridges. And we need to look at the science and figure out, does it make sense for us to build in certain places? I mean, I can look to Houston, Texas, which was a perfect example a couple years ago when they had the historic flooding there as a result of overdevelopment. Too much.
And we have to pause there with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. He chaired the governor's task force on climate change. It's a 32-member group. Governor Evers ordered the formation of this task force to analyze our state's climate crisis back in October of 2019. And the task force just published its 120-page report. Lieutenant Governor, let's look at farming here for a moment. Farmers are dealing with the impacts of climate change, flooding, heat waves. Some agricultural practices have threatened our groundwater in parts of the state. How did you factor farmers in during this plan, during this process?
Oh, we actually, our DACAP secretary was a part of the task force. We had members from the Farmers Union and the Farm Bureau as a part of the task force. And that was that was meaningful in and of itself, because sometimes the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union can be on opposite sides of the coin, regardless of the industry. And so we were able to have some very in-depth discussions. And I'll rewind to and say that one of the best parts about the task force for me was the fact that we had such varied perspective. So many people from different walks of life, people who, maybe on opposing sides of an issue, but haven't ever sat down to really have the conversations. And this made an opportunity. This created a path for those discussions to happen in person. And many times they did. And, you know, that's why we want to make sure that the work, or at least the task force, stays together in some sort of way afterwards. We can continue these conversations. We would hate for it all to go away just because of the formal work has been completed. But we had members from the agriculture community, because they often get blamed for, you know, emissions or, you know, bad practices. But the fact is, we need strong food systems here in the state. We need to be proud of our agricultural heritage here in the state. And we need to provide opportunities to our small family farmers, especially. And so there are ways for us to not point the finger at our farming operations, but make them a part of the solution. And I think it was very helpful for us to approach it in that way.
Well, along these lines and farming techniques, Terry and Alma called in, and Terry couldn't stay with us, but Terry wanted to know what you think of regenerative farming in the state and how that has been.
I'm all about it. I had the chance to visit a number of farms who use regenerative practices, using cover crops. And, we were on one farm last year, and, you know, the guy was just telling us about, you know, how their flooding had been an issue in the area, but the impact on his operation was much less than the impact on his neighbors, because he used practices that made sure that the soil was more adaptable to heavy rainfall. And, you know, we want to be in a position, and that's also one of the recommendations, to help farmers to be able to adapt these sort of practices that help them out personally, individually, but also help out the broader community, and to also help promote these sorts of practices to other farmers who may be a little bit more hesitant to switch it up. And so I'm very excited about the opportunities that we have with the promotion of regenerative practices in farming.
I want to take a look here now at transportation. Transportation and the electricity make up nearly 60% of our state's greenhouse emissions. What does the task force want to achieve in the area of transportation?
Well, in the area of transportation, we want to make sure that we have infrastructure for electric vehicles. This will be the way of the future. Car companies are moving in that direction anyway, and it would be a shame for Wisconsin to be left behind. And a lot of the hesitance people have when it comes to electric vehicles is, the distance fatigue, you know, wondering if their car is going to make it the full trip, which is completely understandable. So we want to make sure that we have, whether it's EV corridors across the state or just more areas for people to have a chance to charge their vehicles, so that we can get higher emitting vehicles off the road as soon as possible. And also public transportation is going to be a big deal. And even non-vehicle transportation, we have complete streets in there as well as a part of the recommendations. I remind you that the last administration was the first, maybe still only, state to get rid of complete streets funding, which makes sure that when we plan communities, when we plan transportation, that we have safe walkable routes, options for bikes as well. And that just helps also to get people off the road, and also helps to build community, because people get outside and not just get in a car and get out the car, but are spending time getting to know their neighbors, spending time, you know, on their feet. And this has a positive health impact as well.
We are breaking down the recommendations from the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change with its chair. We have Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. You can join in on the climate crisis, what you see in this plan, 800-642-1234. Lieutenant Governor, where does this plan go from here? Where does the task force go from here?
Yep. So the plan from here, we hope to see some recommendations come up in the budget. We hope to see some things come up in separate legislation as well. I'll remind you that we had bipartisan membership on the task force from the legislature. And, we are going to explore, or in the task force, I should say, it shows which things can be done through the agencies as well. And so the blueprint, the roadmap is basically laid out for which direction would be the best route for those suggestions, for those solutions. And
what task force recommendations specifically require action by the legislature?
Well, some of it, I mean, if you comb through it, almost anything can be done through the legislature,
subject
right?
But, okay.
Yeah. So yeah. Almost anything, you know, as we have seen, as the legislature has wanted to, you know, be as involved, I'll say, in governing it, when it comes to certain things, we hope that this is something that is taken seriously and something that it does not turn into a dogfight, because it should not. But I do feel that there are number of opportunities for the legislature to act on certain things. But if not, there are some options that are available for executive action or through rulemaking.
For the future
of the task force, I do hope that in some way we'll see the members still come together as more of a council, not necessarily task force, because the formal work has been completed.
You worked a lot together. You know each other.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you anticipate any pushback from the business community or industries that these climate change strategies affect?
I mean, there will always be some pushback, but that's another thing we did, too. We tried to dot all of our I's and cross all of our T's. We had small businesses represented. We had large businesses represented. We had utility companies on the task force. Again, we had insurance companies on the task force. We had Native communities represented. We had students. We had environmental advocates, especially. And so maybe there'll be pushback somewhere, but there is far more opportunities for us to work together.
Well, I want to jump in here and bring in Becky now. Hi, Becky. We're short on time. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just wondering, in our town, outside of the town in Elroy, they spent like a whole year putting up all kinds of solar panels along the hillside, but they've never been put into use. And I'm wondering, you know, I think the government had some help in putting them up, but they're not being used. And I don't understand why.
Any idea there, Lieutenant Governor?
No. Wait, when were those put up?
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, no, I cannot speak that, but I would love to figure that out. If you wouldn't mind sending something to my office at ltgov@wisconsin.gov.
We'll figure out what's happening with those solar panels. Well, Becky, thank you for calling. And Lieutenant Governor, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Mandela Barnes, 45th Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, chairs the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change. By the way, we have a link to the climate change report at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, we check in with two organ transplant physicians about how their work is affected by the pandemic. What questions do you have about organ donation, about organ procurement amid COVID? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.